Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show is packed with movies. It's a fat guy, it's a fat show filled and stuffed with movies. We're going to be talking about six films today. We've got Draft Day, about the Cleveland Browns. Woohoo, go Browns, Cleveland. Rio 2, Oculus, and in limited release, we have Dom Hemingway, Under the Skin, and The Raid 2. We also are going to talk about some news. We're going to have the trailer park, the DVD roundup, a whole bunch of stuff. But if you want to get a hold of me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. Even if we had one, we wouldn't play it this week. We got too much stuff to talk about. You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com and find me on the internet, or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Let's move on to the news.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
So I'm going to rip through a lot of these news stories, so my apologies if you feel like I'm giving any story a little bit of shirking its importance. But the first one I do want to say, rest in peace to Mickey Rooney. We lost Mickey Rooney this week. He died at the age of 93. That is phenomenally old. And, you know, God bless him for making it that long. And he was planning on doing the Night at the Museum 3 movie, having a small part, because he was in the other two. And he had gone through a physical and that sort of thing. But, you know, he finally passed away. I mean, you know, the guy was old when I was a kid. That was what was amazing. When I was seeing movies with him in the 70s and 80s, he was old then. So, I mean, this guy is a legend. This guy is, you know, he's along the lines of Bob Hope in terms of the extent of his career and how many people he touched. So sad to see him go. The next piece of news we have, there's a whole bunch of just either casting news or release news that I find kind of interesting. The first one is Captain America did very well last week, and there are, you know, they now plan these movies before they're released, and they're going to do a Captain America 3 as well. Superman versus Batman originally moved from the 2015 time slot, partly because of Ben Affleck's injury and not wanting, it's a very crowded summer. They moved to May of 2016, and guess what? Captain America 3 pulled that same date, first weekend, and now there's a showdown. Batman versus Superman versus Captain America. We'll see who blinks first. My guess is that eventually DC's going to blink, and that's a smart move. They should. In fact, DC movies tend to do well in later months, in like July. Marvel movies tend to do very well in the onset, so everybody can be happy. The next piece of news is Drew Goddard, who was the director of one of my favorite films of 2012. That would be The Cabin in the Woods. He has been tapped to direct the Spider-Man offshoot, The Sinister Six. Now, I've never read that Marvel series, but I find it's interesting that now that Marvel Studios has shown all that they can do in sort of tying all these people together. You've got X-Men. Fox is trying to spin off all these X-Men characters now. You know, they've done Wolverine. They're talking about a Mystique movie. A Deadpool movie has been talked about for a while. Now Sony, because it has the rights to Spider-Man, is now trying to do spin-offs of that. So we'll see how that works. Sony's only done Spider-Man, so we'll see how well they handle other properties. The next piece of news, this is sort of a no-duh news. It's Peter Mayhew has been... it's been confirmed he's going to be playing Chewbacca in Star Wars 7, which has already started shooting, by the way. In other news, R2-D2 will still have a domed head and beep a lot. I mean, this is a no duh. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of physicality to the role. They just need the tall guy to play Chewbacca. Chewbacca's not exactly doing parkour through things. He's not fighting Darth Maul with a lightsaber or anything. So, yeah, Peter Mayhew, he's a legend, and he played Chewbacca back in 77, has always played Chewbacca. So this is no duh. This is like, oh, really, casting? No kidding. Now, in the more depressing news, Goonies 2 is apparently happening. Richard Donner, the director, has come out and said that they're going to be doing a Goonies 2, which is as bad of an idea as doing a Ghostbusters 3. I mean, the Goonies 2 is going to be the most depressing film you'll ever see, because Goonies was cute and it was for kids and it was for, you know, for like 10-year-olds in that adventure and that Spielberg 80s moment of time. And now you're going to have all these old guys coming back and what, trying to revisit this? It's just going to be sad. I'm sorry. I just mentioned Ghostbusters 3. Turns out that the directors of the Lego movie were offered Ghostbusters 3, and they turned it down. This is a bad sign for this film. It will eventually get made, but it's going to go to a terrible director, it's going to go to a hired gun, and it's going to be a bad movie. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, and that sound means we're going into the trailer park. First one I want to just really hit on really quick, because we're running out of time here. Hercules opens on June 25th. This is the one starring The Rock, not the one with Kellan Lutz. And we're just going to play the trailer. It begins with the most cliche sound used in movie trailers today.
No matter how far you go, man cannot escape his fate.
Now, tell me, who are you?
I am Hercules!
Not a whole lot to say about this. Looks interesting. I'm curious to see what The Rock does with this. I'm curious to see this movie. I kind of want to see what they do. I mean, it's a better cast with a slightly better director, Brett Ratner, but it still kind of looks very generic. It doesn't pop. It doesn't stand out from the other Sword and Sandal movies, the other five or six that we've already had this year. So, not looking forward to it. Less looking forward to the next one. Actually, I'm looking forward to talking about this one because this was mind-boggling. Most people aren't going to see this movie because it's just coming, it's like independently, directly produced a video. But a trailer hit the web this week and it kind of sent people crazy, and it's worth watching because it's so bad. It's a movie called American Blogger, and it's available, quote, early June, so whenever this guy gets around to making it. But you just listen to the trailer. This is just a small part of it. There's more. I encourage you to go see it because it looks like a colossal failure of epic proportions.
From filmmaker Christopher Wiegand, in his feature film debut, comes a journey that spans a nation.
It's a new form of expression that I think is definitely 21st century.
And if we're not sharing it, if we're just keeping it private, why are we experiencing it?
Beautifully filmed and artistically crafted, with stunning cinematography, this story is told against the backdrop of the great American landscape.
This is the most pretentious independent film trailer I have seen in a while, and that's saying a lot. Because there's a lot of independent filmmakers that are really pretentious. The guy begins the thing of saying, well, this guy is now doing his feature film. Nobody knows who this guy is. You don't tout the person as being this great director. He's never done anything. He didn't even do like some independent documentary that got a lot of note. You know, it was just he's just some guy who made it and they made this movie. And apparently his wife's a blogger and she has a blog that has a moderate amount of people following. I don't know how many. Here's the problem. It's called American Blogger, and it's supposed to be talking about bloggers, about people who run blogs. But if you watch the trailer, you don't get this from listening to it, but if you watch the full trailer, there is no diversity whatsoever in the bloggers. They're all white, attractive, apparently well-off women who this guy probably wants to bang. And there's one black girl in the trailer, but she doesn't speak. You just kind of see a quick glimpse of her. There are no men, and there's no age range. They're all like women in their late 20s, early 30s. And they look like they're all exactly the same. And then they talk about, oh, we blog about fashion or food or family. Really? That's all we can blog about? What about politics or international culture or music or movies or philosophy or science or even a celebrity blog? This is such a narrow slice of it. And this guy responded by saying, you know, after he got all this flack for it, he responded by basically saying, well, it's not supposed to represent America. It's people I knew. And I'm like, then why do you say in the trailer, as he travels the United States and interviews a range of bloggers? See, there's no range here. At least that's what's represented in the trailer. Well, and there's even one, there's one girl in there. If you caught it in the trailer, she says, this is definitely a 21st century medium. Well, yeah, no kidding, because blogging and the internet as it is pretty much a 21st century thing. Yeah, it was started in the 90s. It really started to take hold, and blogging was a term that was coined in 97. But that's like saying the iPhone is pretty much a 21st century listening. It is. It's just that's when it came out. It's like saying the automobile is pretty much a 20th century. Yeah, because that's when it really became a big thing. And you know what's not 21st century, though, is movies that begin with American blank. We've had American Pie, American Movie, American Pimp, American Beauty, American Psycho. All of these before the turn of the century, and by the early 2000s to mid 2000s, it became stale. Yeah, you get like American Hustle and American Gangster. Those movies are used. I've got a better title for this. How about American Idiot? This movie looks terrible. I gotta go to a break. When we come back, I'm gonna be talking about the sequels, Raid 2 and Rio 2. Kevin Carr coming at you, taking out pretentious independent filmmakers and calling them out on the carpet. People like this guy who did American Vlogger. Oh, holy cats, that movie looks so bad. Let's move on to movies that can't possibly be as bad as American Vlogger is going to be. I do encourage you to go find this. Go Google American Vlogger. You'll find it. Watch this trailer because it will make you want to throw up in your shorts. It is so terrible. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Rio 2. The blue macaws discover a flock of their own, once thought extinct, in the Amazon rainforest and head out to join them.
Important discovery.
We have encountered a wild blue speaks macaw deep in the Amazon jungle.
We're not the only ones.
There may be a whole flock out there.
We have to help Linda and Tulio find them.
We? What you talking about we? You speak French.
We are all going to the Amazon. Yay.
Goodbye, stinky city air.
Daddy?
Look at me, I'm a grandpa! Oh!
Nice to meet you, sir.
You will call me Pop-Pop.
Kids, go easy on old Pop-Pop.
You can call me sir.
I remember when the first Rio came out, what was that, about 3 years ago, 2011, something like that? It was a cute movie. One thing that I have to say about the Blue Sky people who did this, and they did Ice Age, they may do sequels to death, as they did with the Ice Age movies, but they do in new movies. They're not like remakes or not adaptations of fairy tales or anything like that. They're kind of these original stories. And for better or for worse, that's a good thing. I encourage Hollywood to do unique movies. Kind of like when Universal did Despicable Me, or DreamWorks did How to Train Your Dragon. Whether or not you like these movies, they're new and they're different. So that's kind of cool. So Rio 2 is a sequel, and it looks beautiful. And we're at the point now, if it comes out by one of the major studios, it should look gorgeous as an animated film. If it doesn't look gorgeous as an animated film, they're doing it wrong. But yeah, Rio 2 looks beautiful, and that was the charm of the first movie. They had all the dancing. They were in like midair, and they were in carnival and in Rio, and you had all the very colorful birds, and they kind of really sanitized Rio. They just kind of fly over the barrios and the slums. You don't go inside and see the poverty. So all the people in poverty are very happy. It's a very happy poverty movie, but it's not about people and completely. It's about these birds, and it's a cute story. It's cute enough for kids to like. And I think the kids are going to respond very well because it's a movie about dancing and singing birds. The human characters, not so much. I mean, there is this kind of ham-fisted environmental message where one of the bad guys is a guy who's just cutting down the rainforest, I'm not saying it's good to cut down the rainforest, but I mean, hasn't this been the bad guy since like the 80s? And it just seems such a trite character to throw in there. And not very well developed. There's no reasoning behind his stuff. He's just evil about this. And of course they bring back Jemaine Clement as the cockatoo, the evil white cockatoo. And he was great in the first movie. He just doesn't have anything to do in this movie. They kind of throw him in there because they need to put all the characters from the first film. And that's what's cobbled the Ice Age sequels. So the first Ice Age, which was very charming and cute and everybody had a role and everyone was significant to the plot, and very similar to the first sequel to the Ice Age, they tried to find something for everybody. The Madagascar movies did this as well. First movie had everybody very important to the film, because if they weren't, they would have edited them out in the script stage. But now you have this huge cast of characters and this huge cast of voice actors that everybody's got to come back, and they got to shoehorn every single character in there and then add more. And that's part of the problem with these sequels to animated films. They just keep adding more characters and keep the ones that are in there, and everyone has to have a subplot. So the movie gets very crowded and there's no real good villain. Like I said, you've got Jemaine Clement coming back as the cockatoo, and you had the evil businessman who's wanting to cut down the rainforest, and he's got his henchmen and a monkey. It just kind of goes all over the place, but the kids are gonna like it. It's pretty, It's fun. It's cute. It's not bad. It's, you know, I mean, it's a, if you want to get the kids out of the house for 2 hours, that's the one way to do it. So in the end, I'm actually going to just, you know, basically say Rio 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's move on. Another sequel that starts with an R. And this one is rated R, whereas Rio 2 is rated G. So for families out there wanting to take the kids, there are not even fart jokes in this movie. There's no fart jokes in the Raid 2 either, but there's a lot more killing and blood and martial arts in the Raid 2. This is, of course, the sequel to the Raid, Redemption, that came out a couple years ago. After the raid on the crime boss in the first film, Rawa takes an undercover assignment to take down a massive crime syndicate.
Nah, kalau kita mau membersihkan kota ini dengan bersih, kita harus tangkap mereka. Nama-nama yang penting.
My apologies. This is in Indonesia. It's an Indonesian film, so it's going to be in another language. No, he didn't say anything bad there. He basically, what was being said at the beginning of the trailer was, we're going to take down this organization. We're going to take down from the top. And what the Raid Redemption, the first film, is known for is just pretty much nonstop action. That movie, these police officers go into this apartment building and have to basically work their way up. If you saw Dredd, it's kind of the exact same story, only it's not science fiction and they don't have the big, you know, Judge Dredd helmets or anything like that. But it's essentially the same thing where they're trying to get up to a certain floor and take down these bad guys. And the one cop is just fighting everybody. And it's fantastic martial arts and fantastic action. The first Raid was just a little bit heavy on that. I know people loved it and it's a huge cult following, but that first one was, there's not much to it. It's just martial arts for like 2 hours. This one, I give them a lot of credit because while it's not a perfect film, they try to do a lot more with this. The movie has a greater plot. It has a more complex plot. It is not just wall-to-wall action, which I think might upset some people who are big fans, but they deliver on the action. You have the hand-to-hand combat. You have face-to-hammer combat. You have a variety of weapons being used, and each assassin has his or her own blades, or one guy uses a baseball bat, and so, like I said, it's extremely violent, very R-rated, but it's much more complex because it's got the guy going undercover, and he kind of goes into prison, and he has to befriend these people, and it's really more of a crime thriller than it is just a straightforward action film, which is what the first one was. And I appreciated that. I thought that was good. I thought that made not a better movie necessarily, but a different movie. And that's good. Whereas Rio 2 was out there trying to shoehorn everybody else from the other movie into this plot that was undercooked. This one really took time to develop a plot. There's plot and there's characters and there's intrigue and there's double crossing and it's in Indonesian, whatever the language, in Jakarta they speak. I don't know, but it's gonna have subtitles. So yeah, if you're one of those people like, if I want to read, I'm gonna go get a good library. You're not gonna like this movie. But the reason to see the movie isn't necessarily, I mean, the plot's much better, I think. And it's not as thrilling as the first one, but it has some great action. And the reason a lot of people are going to want to see this is for the action and the martial arts. I'm going to say The Raid 2, it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
With that, I need to go to a break. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about a couple other films, Draft Day and Oculus. Guys of the Movies coming back at you with Kevin Carr here. Are you ready for some football? I'm not a big sports fan. I don't know if people know that. I've said this before. I'm not a huge sports fan. I mean, I'm from Ohio. I'm from Columbus. And while I don't care about OSU, My dad's a crazy Browns fan, and so I watched a lot of Browns games in the 70s and 80s with him growing up, and I tried to get into it, but I just couldn't. Sports don't do it for me, and that's fine. Yeah, different strokes for different folks, all type of people. It takes all types to make a world. But it does kind of leave me at a loss for sort of the cultural phenomenon of sports. I don't get into it, so I can understand and I can see where people are going, but I just can't get into sports. I imagine if the Browns ever went to the Super Bowl, you know, if that ever happens, I would probably pay attention, or not, because I know they'd probably lose. Because it's the Browns, man. What do you expect? But most of the sports I consume are in the form of movies. I see a lot of sports movies. Draft Day is the latest sports movie. And what's funny, it's a sports movie without a lick of sports being played at all. There isn't one bit of football played in Draft Day. It's about Draft Day. And it stars Kevin Costner as the general manager of the Cleveland Browns in a fictional story of him trying to wheel and deal on the day of the NFL draft to build a winning team.
Let's talk about the draft. I need you to make a splash, Sonny. If you can't do it, then I have to do it.
Just to be clear here, you're threatening to fire me, right? Your job is to coach a team I give you. They do it different in Dallas?
Yeah, they do. They win. A lot.
How is it that the ultimate prize in the most macho sport ever invented is a piece of jewelry?
We talk football?
We can always talk football.
I just want the team that I want one time.
You see things other people don't see.
I want this team's future back.
It's an interesting film because, like I said, I don't do sports. I'm not interested in sports. I'm not interested in football. The draft bores me to tears. But I'm aware of it. I know how it works very generally because my dad would watch it when I used to live there, when, you know, in high school and college. So I kind of come in as a novice, if somebody who doesn't know anything really about the teams and their dynamics. My dad is a crazy Browns fan. He knows the draft. He knows the league. He knows the team. He watched them in Cleveland, because he's from Cleveland, back when he was, you know, when they were winning championships in the 50s. I took him to see this movie and he loved it. And I think that says more to the film than me, because at least coming from somebody from Ohio, I love the Browns. I'd love to see the Browns win. And the Browns fans are so loyal, to almost to a fault. And they point it out in the movie. But, you know, God bless them. The Browns fans, they are clutching to it. And one of these days, they're going to win. Or something good's going to happen. So my dad loved the movie, and I enjoyed it as well. And what I found neat about that is me really not knowing much about the draft and the intricate details of it, I wasn't lost, which is a dangerous game to play because the draft can be kind of complicated. So I was up to speed. I could figure out what was going on more than I could even when I was watching Moneyball. There's a scene in Moneyball, which is very similar to this movie. Actually, only that's baseball and this is football. In Moneyball, Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill are on the phone, wheeling and dealing, making trades and stuff like that. It's very, very typical of the writer of the film. That scene confused me. This movie didn't. And it also, my dad was okay with it because it didn't dumb it down and he didn't have to sit through 15 minutes of them explaining how the draft works for, you know, the people who are going to go see this movie who don't know how the draft works. So I think they did a really good job writing it to actually incorporate football fans and non-football fans. Now, of course, I saw it in Columbus, and Columbus is about 2 hours from Cleveland, and there are tons of Browns fans in there. And some of them afterwards, what's funny, some of them afterwards were sort of grumbling, saying, well, you know, is this the only way we're going to see the Browns win? And this seems a little fantastic because this is a fictional story, and they really want the Browns to do well. But it's kind of like Major League. Remember when Major League came out in 1989? And that movie was about the Cleveland Indians, who were like dead last, and they hadn't won a pennant in almost 40 years. And then, you know, just like 6 years after Major League came out, the Indians are going to the World Series, which is kind of cool because that's a huge turnaround for that ball club. Maybe the same thing will happen with Draft Day. Maybe suddenly the Browns might get some interest, some national interest. Who knows? But the movie itself is pretty solid. It's all quote unquote inside baseball, but it's interesting and it's easy to follow. And there's also like a relationship story with Kevin Costner and Jennifer Gardner and You know, they have that for people who want to see the romance. And there's he's dealing with the death of his father, who was the former coach, and he's dealing with his mom, who's the widow, and sort of having to deal with that sort of interpersonal relationship thing. And it's not just about football, and at times the football is an allegory and a symbol for his own personal relationships, but it's also just a good solid movie about sports that has no sports being played whatsoever. So yeah, it's fun. It's a neat movie. If you live in Cleveland and you're a Cleveland Browns fan, go see this movie, because you're going to absolutely lose your mind over it. It's for the average person, you know, or somebody who doesn't care about the Cleveland Browns, it's still a fun movie. And I think it's accessible to both football fans and non-football fans alike. So I'm going to say Draft Day kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I'm going to be talking about is Oculus. This is a horror film, and it is directed by Mike Flanagan, I think is his name. And he is the guy. He directed an independent film called Abstentia, which got a lot of, I didn't particularly like it, but it got a lot of buzz from the horror community. And now he's got the big budget movie, Oculus. And in the movie, 10 years after their father went insane and killed their mother, a brother and sister reunite to destroy the haunted mirror they believed possessed their father to commit the evil acts.
I found it.
What do you mean?
We only have a few days.
A few days for what?
To keep our promise and kill it.
My name is Kaylee Ann Russell. The purpose of today's experiment is to prove that the object behind me is responsible for at least 45 deaths in the 4 centuries of its recorded existence.
We were just kids. We made up a scary story so we wouldn't have to accept the fact that our father was a sick man who killed our
mom.
The biggest thing I can say that I loved about this movie is the fact it wasn't found footage. And it totally could have been, because they use cameras and that sort of thing. It totally could have been a found footage movie, and it wasn't. Thank God, because I'm so tired of found footage, and it's such a gimmick, and it's been overused. Flanagan decided to take it a different approach, and he took it along the lines of something like Insidious or The Conjuring or Sinister, where it's that sort of throwback to the older 70s thriller horror with, you know, light and shadow and playing with creepy images and suspense and atmosphere. And that's a good thing. And the other thing this does, which is something that Sinister 2 did, the scariest scenes aren't necessarily in the dark. And that's kind of cool. It was very bold choice for James Wan to do that in the Insidious Part 2. And Flanagan does it here, I think even more effectively at times, where there are some creepy, creepy scenes in a completely brightly lit area. It's a very well-constructed movie. It looks gorgeous. Karen Gillan, who some people might recognize from Doctor Who. She played Amy Pond, one of the Doctor's latest companions. She's in it, and she's just adorable, and she's very compelling. The guy who plays her brother is more sort of like a James Vanderbeek wannabe, and he's sort of disposable, and I think he kind of brings down the quality of the movie, so kind of whenever he's on screen, it looks like kind of a CW, you know, Vampire Diaries movie, whereas I think Karen Gillan brings a little bit more gravitas to the role and makes it, she has a better screen presence than he does. But if you can look past that, it's a creepy movie. It's not terribly scary. It's maybe as scary as Mama. If you remember the movie Mama from last year with Jessica Chastain and the little girls that were feral girls, and there was a ghost that was taking care of them in the woods. That is what, this movie kind of reminds me of. So it's not terribly scary. Don't go expecting something like Insidious or The Conjuring. But if you just want a creepy little movie, I mean, for a horror film, it's kind of cool. I wish it came out in October, because this just seems like the wrong time to release a horror movie. But I guess Insidious came out in April, and that was a huge hit. I don't know if this is going to be as big of a hit, because it's not as good as Insidious. It's not as good as The Conjuring or Sinister, but it's cut from the same cloth. And I think it's worth checking out. So I'm going to say Oculus kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. We're out of time. We're going to be talking about 2 more movies in the next segment, Don Hemingway and Under the Skin, plus the box office and the world famous DVD roundup. Kevin Carr here with Fat Guys in the Movies, rolling into the final segment. We are wrapping you up. We've talked about football, evil mirrors, Indonesian undercover cops, birds of a feather. Now we're going to be talking about a couple other movies. Before we move into the box office and the DVD roundup, because there's so many coming out right now, and they're worth checking out, and they're kind of big releases. They're not going to make a ton of money, some of them. You know, like, I don't think The Raid 2 is going to make a ton of money, but they're worth talking about. The first one I want to talk about is Dom Hemingway. It actually opened last week. Very limited release in like four theaters. So it's coming out a little wider this week. And in this film, Jude Law plays a foul-mouthed thug released from prison who tries to collect on a debt while reconciling with his estranged daughter.
Domingo Hemingway.
Mr. Fontaine.
You hunt.
No. Only use a gun to hold up a place or threaten someone or rob them or pistol whip them or scare them. But no hunting.
Dom Hemingway is free.
A little welcome home present.
Hello, ladies.
No one call me for 3 days.
Dad.
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm really conflicted with this movie. There's parts of it that I think are really well done. I think Jude Law does a fantastic performance in this film. I mean, he's over the top. Sometimes a little too much. I mean, it's almost grandstanding at times, but he does a fantastic performance, and he's kind of having a real resurgence with stuff like The Grand Budapest Hotel, and now you've got Dom Hemingway. He's a good actor, and I think he's got range, and this definitely shows some of it. If you like British comedies, that's kind of how it works. Richard E. Grant plays one of his former associates who meets him out of prison. Very, very much a scene-stealing performance, because he's very funny in it. And the problem is it's a very conflicted movie, because on one hand, it has that very funny, you know, it's almost in a Guy Ritchie kind of British crime approach, with him just being obnoxious and crazy and doing some outrageous stuff. And that's funny. But then there's this story of him trying to reconcile with his daughter, which doesn't gel at all with the rest of the film. And if the entire movie was that, it would have been interesting. Or if the entire movie was just him being outrageous, it would have been interesting, but it's so bipolar at times, which I guess is maybe the point. And it does wrap up almost too easily and too quickly at the end. I mean, honestly, when the credits rolled, I was like, I guess that's it. I better go home now. It didn't feel complete, but overall as a film itself, I gotta say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
All right. The next movie I want to talk about is one called Under the Skin. Scarlett Johansson plays an alien creature that roams the streets of Scotland, seducing men and then processing them for a mysterious purpose.
So you live alone?
Yes.
You think I'm pretty?
I like her gorgeous.
Come to me. You don't want to wake up, do you?
Apologies if that blurb sounded incredibly vague, but as you can tell from the trailer, the movie itself is extremely vague. And this movie made a lot of noise because Scarlett Johansson's completely nude in it. So the Scarlett Johansson nudity factor is a very appealing thing to some people. And what you do see is her doing a really interesting performance. And while she's kind of an idiot sometimes in interviews, she can do a decent performance. And it's a very low key movie. It's a very slow burn. And it reminded me of a movie. There's a movie called Beyond the Black Rainbow that came out a couple of years ago that is really out there and bizarre. And it has a very retro synth soundtrack to it. And while they're very different films, that's the way it is. There's not a lot of dialogue. You don't ever really get any answers to what's going on. And that's sort of the appeal in a film like this, because they don't all have to be the big Marvel superhero movies. They don't have to all be Star Wars. You can have a science fiction film. And this really feels like kind of that throwback to the 80s science fiction film, which is cool. These sort of movies like, you know, The Quiet Earth, these off-kilter films that weren't necessarily mainstream. Under the Skin's a very interesting movie. It's not for everybody, but it is one of many cool independent science fiction films that are coming out this year, which if you're at all a fan of that genre, you should pay attention to, because there's some pretty cool stuff happening. But ultimately, I got to say, Under the Skin rocks. It was a cool movie.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on to the box office. No big surprise, Captain America, The Winter Soldier, won the box office, but what was a little bit surprising was how much it won by. It made $95 million, which is a record in April. And yes, it had a 3D bump, and yeah, it's dealing with inflation. And one of the closest films was Fast Five. But see, the difference was that one came out, like, it technically was an April release because it, like, released on April 30th, but it was kind of like that first weekend of the summer because May 1st fell somewhere in the weekend. Either Saturday or Sunday. This one's a full-blown April release, and it's a record for April, and that's really good. That shows that Marvel has a really strong brand. It shows that Marvel integrating its movies has been a win for them because sequels are getting better box office. So this looks great for Captain America. So, you know, good for them. It's going to have a very profitable run, and it will definitely offset any problems with other, you know, risks that they're going to be taking later on, which they plan to do. And we'll talk more about that, the risks that Marvel is taking. We're going to talk about that next week because I got a lot to say about that and some of the other movies that are coming down the pike. But number two was Noah, and it dropped 60%, but that was to be expected. And what's interesting, the cinema score, it held better compared, when you look at the cinema score, getting like a C cinema score, people said it's going to crash and burn 70% or more. The reason it didn't is because there was a certain percentage of the audience, and these were the people, the biblical faithful, the people who wanted the literal interpretation, they gave it like the worst cinema score they could, and then the rest of the audience gave it a positive one, and so that kind of averaged out to the middle. So the faith-based audience did not embrace this movie, but the mainstream audience enjoyed it. Noah's, I think it's made like $200 million worldwide so far, more than that. So it's a hit, and it's the biggest movie Darren Aronofsky's ever done. This week, I think Captain America will actually repeat. I think Captain America is going to be good for about $45 million. Rio 2, I think, is going to be in really close. It's going to be like a $42, $43 million. But I think going head-to-head, I think Captain America is going to win this. But it's going to be a big win for both Rio 2 and Captain America. It's going to be a big week for both. With that sound, we need to move on, and that means we got to roll into the DVD roundup. All right, the spotlight I want to hit this week is a show called The IT Crowd, and it's a British show. And it's, you know, of course, because British shows have like 6 episodes a season. There's like 20-some episodes, but it's like 5 seasons long or whatever. And it just recently wrapped up in 2013. It stars Richard Ayoade, I think is how you say his name. And most people in America might recognize him from being in The Watch, that movie with Ben Stiller and Vince Vaughn. He's incredibly funny, and Chris O'Dowd's in it. And he's the guy from Bridesmaid. He was her sort of cop boyfriend in Bridesmaids. He also showed up in Thor 2 as a guy trying to date Natalie Portman's character. This is a very funny show. It's basically about guys who work at a crappy IT department of a big business with an incompetent boss, and their manager is a woman who knows nothing about IT. And it's just the shenanigans they pull. It's a very British comedy. It's extremely funny, and once it really ramps up, it is hilarious. Has some great moments. If you haven't had a chance to see it, check it out. It's on Netflix streaming, so you know, you can burn through this thing in a weekend if you really wanted to. The other movies I want to talk about in DVD roundup. First of all, we've got The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. That is the latest Hobbit movie. I know this movie gets a lot of hate from some people, particularly Tolkien loyalists who, because there were some changes made and it was expanded and the whole Hobbit trilogy has been expanded. I still enjoyed this movie. It was a lot of fun. It's got a dragon in it. And yeah, it's overwritten at times. And yeah, it's not a complete story. And yeah, it's just a bridge. But it's still a fun movie. I enjoy these Hobbit movies. I actually like the Hobbit movies better than the Lord of the Rings movies. But that's just me. And the Blu-ray has a whole bunch of special features, production diaries, and all that good stuff. So it actually has some that are worth seeing before you wait for the extended edition, which should come out in the next 6 months or so. Grudge Match, which stars Sylvester Stallone and Robert De Niro as aging boxers settling a score. Not bad. It's kind of right on the cusp kind of movie. Worth seeing for the 80s nostalgia. And it has some okay special features, but nothing really to write home about. There's Badass 2, Badasses, starring Danny Trejo and Danny Glover as two old men seeking revenge for a friend's murder. There's Norma Rae. This actually came out last week. I had a chance to get this on Blu-ray. Classic movie, worth checking out, especially if you have any sort of allegiance to a union. August Osage County, if you don't get enough dysfunctional family fighting at the holidays, you can watch this movie. It has some good performances. There's also Paranormal Activity, the Mark Ones, is terribly awful, horrible, nauseating to watch, but it's not the worst of the week. There is the stinker of the week, which is Justin Bieber's Believe, because this guy is an idiot and his latest shenanigans make me not even want to acknowledge this movie's existence. That's it. We are wrapped up. But next week, we're going to be talking about Bears, A Haunted House 2, Heaven is for Real, Transcendence, 13 Sins. It's going to be a fat slate of movies next week. But I have to go now. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.